We are joined here with Andy and Kim Holak. Guys, thank you. Thanks for coming down and joining us here on the Duluth Rundown podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about the winter series that you guys have coming up. I know we just had the Chester race just this past Saturday, so we'll talk a little bit about what happened there and then the other races that are coming up as well for the rest of the winter, and talk a little bit about some of your guys' running experiences over the years. First off, let's start with some of the winter series stuff that's just happening, the Chester race. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we just had the Chester Rim 5K. It was last Saturday. The field was a little bit smaller than last year, but we had another race going on that day, so hopefully next year we'll coordinate a little better with our local running race directors and come up with a different date so we can get a few more people out there just to enjoy the trail. It was a beautiful day. It was a gorgeous day. The trail was incredibly, you know, beautiful. I do have to admit, though, it was a little bit challenging. The snow was a little bit soft. We've already gotten, I think, close to 4 feet of snow this winter. Yeah. And it's not even, you know, it's the middle
it's
of the summer.
It's not winter.
So probably, yeah, probably 3 feet of snow on the ground still. Yeah. So the trails are packing down, but it's a challenge. So
yeah.
I was out, I think, literally every day from the big snowstorm. I missed a couple days. I was out almost every day. I live two blocks from Chester Park, so I was out on my snowshoes every day running the loop and trying to pack it down. And other people were snowshoeing too. But it was a race went well. It was a lot of fun. Beautiful day, like I said. We had about 50 runners, okay. 50 finishers, maybe fewer than that didn't show up.
And no PRs for anybody.
Yeah, no PRs. Mike Ward. Mike, you still got your
course record.
Yes. Still got the course record from last year, Mike. Yeah, the conditions were a little faster last year. It was a little icy.
It was
but
icy.
There was
it was firm last year.
There was definitely firm. Cold. Tony, yeah, you're out spice. Taking pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it was definitely slower. It's just like, you know, people were if you stepped off the pack part of the trail, you'd post hole. Like you're
up to
your quad. Oh, Jess Koski was out there and said, "Yeah, you know, conditions were pretty good, but you know, like you had to stay right in the middle of the trail. If you stepped off at all, you were going in. You were going to post hole." So
yeah.
He went in.
He did.
So this was the first of five winter mm-hmm. running races, and this is the second year this has gone on.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired this series?
Well, I think actually it was Kim that inspired, I think, kind of got this whole thing going. So the Duluth Winter Trail Running Series is something we started last year. Last year we had four races. This year we added a fifth race at the end of February, February 22nd. It's the Frozen 4-Hour Race. And we're going to have a 5K that day as well because it's a beautiful 5K course.
Right. But what started it was two winters ago, we actually had an ideal winter for running on trails.
Mm.
And so Andy and I, every weekend, we went out from our house and going on the Duluth Traverse. And every weekend, we just went 1 mile more. So we would just do it out and back. And so we made to Lincoln Park.
I was going to say, you headed out west?
Yes, headed west. And we kept saying, oh, these are just great trails. They were just beautiful to run in mm-hmm. in the winter. And he said, yeah, we should really do a series. And he started talking about summer. And I said, you know, I don't want to mess with that spring and fall series. I don't want to, because that is a great event in both of those seasons. Mm-hmm. And I said, why not do it in the winter? And he's like, yes. So we started the winter series.
Yeah. And, you know, that's exactly right. And, you know, there's not as much going on in the winter. There's so many, I mean, literally, I have like these ideas, fun ideas for races that I keep thinking of, but there's just no weekend.
Yeah,
there's
look at the calendar.
So much going on. Like, oh, when are we going to do it? There's so many other good races going on.
Yeah.
So, like Kim said, the winter is kind of an area, you know, time of the season, there's not as much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, most of our races are shorter 5K, 10K. We have the Northwoods Marathon and Half Marathon. But yeah, like Kim said, the trails were just packed perfectly. For like almost 2 months, and we're like, man, this is so great. We gotta share this with all these other, you know, other people.
Oh yeah.
So that's what we kind of inspired the Duluth Winter Trail Running Series. And last year we had a little bit more challenging conditions. We had a lot of snow. This year it looks like the winter may continue to be challenging, but hopefully we get things packed down. Things are starting to pack down pretty well. And like today, we were just talking earlier about. Hartley Park is they're grooming that now, and That trail is, I was just out there yesterday and the trail's packed just beautifully for fat biking, for, you know, for running. It's packed really well. So hopefully things, you know, we don't get, you know, 2 more feet of snow. You know, maybe the snow will come in smaller increments like they did 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. And then pack it down.
Right. Not these big dumpings.
Yeah. That's the problem. You know, like 2 years ago, we'd get like 4 to 6 inches and it packed down. Right. And then, you know, a week later, we'd get maybe 4 or 5 inches and it would pack down. But last year we'd get like 1 foot or 8 inches, or, you know, it just, it was hard to, you know, it would, by the time we'd get packed down, it was starting to, it would get more snow. So hopefully this year we can get it packed down. And so we've got, our next race in the series is, January 4th, and that's the Northwoods, half marathon and marathon championship, trail championships.
Which is preceded by.
Yep. Yes. And then Friday night, just before that, is our Trail Running Film Festival. So the second year we've done that as well. Last year we had about 100 people at the film festival, and we had a really cool slate of trail running films that were a lot of fun. I think people had a good time. People were, you know, drinking some beer and
you can get your packet
socializing and pickup for the marathon and the Northwoods marathon and half marathons there. So Trail Running Film Festival is coming up January 3rd, and that's super fun. And then January 4th is the marathon and half marathon. And then we have the Wild Winter Wipeout 5K at Spirit Mountain, which was super fun last year.
But super cold.
Yeah. It was like 5 below, I think, was the high that day. Yeah. So I think it was probably 10 below during the race.
Wow.
But that's a fun run because you don't even have to really worry about the trails so much because we're actually on the groomed downhill ski runs.
Right.
We run up the runs, and then we blast down, like, super fun just flying down the hill. Some people were sliding on their stomachs down the hill.
Wear the right clothes. You can get down really fast.
Yeah. Wear, like, really slippery pants. Like a garbage like wind bag pants. Or garbage bags or really nice slippery nylon wind pants.
The one guy was
pants.
Doing a chest dive.
Yeah. The video on your website is great of that guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of doing the super run down the hill and everything.
The Wild Winter Wipeout 5K is super fun. And that race, I thought in my mind, like, oh man, it's gonna be so fun to run down the hill. Like, oh, and I kept thinking about was running down the hill.
Yeah.
But I kept forgetting that you got to go up the hill to get down. And then when I was out, I did the final like course, mileage. I was just out with my GPS and figuring out the mileage. And I started going up. I'm like, oh, yeah, you got to go up the hill to go back down. And so there's 2 pretty tough climbs, but the downhills are a lot of fun.
What if it was, your race entry got you a lift ticket and you went all the way to the top? And just run down. I mean, how many miles? Would that be like a 1 mile?
You can make it a
like
mile.
Four
yeah. You can make it 1 mile.
You can make it 1 mile?
Yeah.
Huh. A 1 mile downhill.
Depending on which ski run you use.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. It's like 3/4 mile from the base to the very top. Yeah. Something like that. Yes. Yeah. But if you go a little bit
around
a little bit.
Yep.
So then after that is our, I should mention that our Northwoods Marathon and Half Marathon are also snowshoe races. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then after a Wild Winter Wipeout, so February, I believe it's February 8th, is Hartley Park 10K. Mm-hmm. And that's super fun.
Which
and that's
also
awesome.
A snowshoe.
Yep, also a snowshoe race. Mm-hmm. And then our new race, the Frozen 4-Hour, is going to be out at Lester Amity Chalet, is where it's going to be. And it's a nice, it's a really cool 5K loop that we laid out. And it's a really nice loop, so we decided, well, it's a 5K loop. It's a really nice loop. Let's add a 5K. So
nice.
So you can sign up for the 5K or the 4-hour event.
And the 4-hour is the same loop.
Yep.
Right.
You same loop.
Complete it as many times.
Yep. And so we're
because we had so much fun at the Chester Park.
Yes. Mike's
that is truly what inspired that one.
Yeah.
Kim and I had a really good time at the Chester Park 6-hour.
Yeah.
Those fixed time type events seem to be gaining traction.
That was actually my first time event I'd ever done.
Yeah.
I'd never done a 24-hour anything, and that was really fun. I really enjoyed it. So we thought, well, let's do it in the winter.
Yeah.
4 hours, make it a little shorter.
Yep.
Maybe next year we'll add an 8-hour. You know, 4, 8, 12, 24, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows where it ends? But start with 4, and then we'll see where it goes.
What time of the... I haven't looked at that part on the website. What time of the day does the 4-hour start?
The 4-hour starts... You know. I believe it's 9:30.
Okay. I think so you'll have daylight the whole time. Personally,
yes.
I don't need headlamps or
anything. Yep, nope, daylight the whole time.
Okay.
And it's a fun course.
Yeah, 9 a.m. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
we're thinking about doing we may do a potluck after, after
4 hours, the last one.
After
the
last, last year we did a potluck at Hartley, the last run of the series. So
that's right.
Lester Amity Chalet is a great venue.
That.
It's a really nice venue, and the ski club's been really, the DXC has been awesome to work with, and they're they really want to encourage more use of the chalet. They want people to get out and use it. So they're like, it's great if you guys are coming out to use it. So.
And I have to say, each of these races have a great venue. Well, I mean, Chester was a great place to have it. Spirit is an awesome venue, which is where we do Last Runner Standing, another race. And so, yeah, each of them are pretty delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were, this year for Chester Chester Rim, we rented out the chalet.
Okay.
So we had the chalet available. And that was nice because last year we just had a tent set up and it wasn't quite as warm.
Yeah.
But the chalet made it really nice afterwards. People kind of socialized a little bit and hung
Take
out.
Take off your layers.
So that was really nice. Yeah. And then the view. Yeah, Kim made some awesome oatmeal cookies.
Nice.
It's just a beautiful venue.
You know, I mean, you kind of need like a nice venue for winter.
You do,
right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Stay warm.
And so with the 4-hour thing especially, to be out there that long, to have it in the chalet and be able to kind of just hang out as much as you need to in the chalet, it's going to be worth it for sure.
Yeah.
Like, we always talk about trail conditions. You know, we want to keep our listeners informed of the trail conditions. And we talk about races a lot, you know, and some races like, say, Zumbro, you know, 2019 was canceled because of weather and stuff. And, well, the winter series just seems like there are so many more negative variables, you know, whether it be cold or too warm even, or, you know, like deep snow like last year or just no snow. And so, I mean, what as winter, you know, race directors, what is like your main fear or like the worst conditions, you know, what do you see in the forecast and say, oh crap, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually probably warm, because we don't want to damage the pack trails.
That would be
that'd probably be the worst thing. So for instance, at Chester Rim, we kind of modified the course this year because the west side of the Chester Rim Trail, which is a multi-use trail that gets used by fat bikes and other users, that was soft. So we were kind of worried about post-holing and just kind of destroying that trail. So the east side of Chester Rim was packed much better because a lot more walkers are using that, and it's snowshoers were packing it down pretty well. So we thought, well, let's just use half of the Chester Rim trail, drop down into the soccer field. We added a really nice climb up to the top of the ski hill and back down. So a little taste of Wild Winter Wipeout. And so that was a kind of an, you know, we're willing to certainly adjust our course if we need to. Like if, you know, again, if, you know, the weather gets, like I said, 50 degrees or something and we're going to be out in slush, we don't want people running through that. Primarily because we don't want to like create these icy conditions and post holes that are going to freeze and make it no fun for anybody. So we have some, you know, we have some ideas for course modifications if we need to. You know, like we're kind of like, you know, Kim and I have talked about like a blizzard would be kind of exciting, you know. And you know, the one way we're kind of
epic.
Well, you know, epic, you know, Zumbro is a 100-mile race. So, you know, the loops are like 20 miles. So you're out there and they have aid stations that are inaccessible if the weather's bad. Where our races are shorter. We're 5K, 10K. We don't have aid stations necessarily. We have one at the marathon and half marathon, but that's pretty accessible off a street. So
and the main venue, you know, like Zumbro doesn't have a main
having
venue.
A warm, it's at this, we have a warm place to go to get like, so the 4 hour, if the weather gets bad, you every loop you're coming in, every 5K you're coming in, you can get warm, you can change your shoes. So I've actually, along those lines, you know, so we're, so I think our, I think the way our races are set up for the Duluth Winter Trail Series is we can avoid a lot of those pitfalls of, you know, that Zumbro has because they're shorter races. We have a nice warm venue to go into to stay warm. So I did a little Google search about like 100-mile snowshoe race. And there's no 100-mile snowshoe races in the whole country. And so I found one. There's one in Vermont called The Peak, and it's the only one I could find. So
it's a 100-miler?
100-mile snowshoe race. And so
snowshoe only. You can't.
I think it's snowshoe only, so I was thinking, you know what? You know, Barkley's a hard race.
Yeah.
But there's nothing going to be harder than running 100 miles in deep snow.
Brutal.
Right? So my thought is, if you ever did that, if anybody ever decided to do that, which I've been thinking about, a 10-mile course.
Yeah, a loop.
A 10-mile loop where you'd have one aid station that's accessible maybe. But a 10-mile loop, so you can make it, you know, Barkley's 5 20-mile loops. A 10-mile loop would be safer. So that's one way to make an event like that a little safer. So I'm starting to formulate some ideas in my head about something like that. So a 100-mile snowshoe race, that could be the toughest race in the country.
Well, like Hitchcock, when you think about, you know, it. Hitchcock was last weekend, and that's not a snowshoe race per se, but
yeah,
it's kind of the winter 100 miler type deal.
Yeah. You know, but so. It doesn't go up Ely's Peak.
Yeah.
No. So as you can see, Mike, our biggest fear for this, for a race that goes on in the winter, isn't about extreme conditions. It's literally about, we don't want to damage the trail.
Yeah.
I'd say that's kind of the...
Right.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And then on the other hand, I would say that also that winter trails are also much more resilient. Because, you know,
they can change within a day. Yeah.
You know, like I was telling somebody, you know, we obviously want to protect our trails, and we don't want to create situations that aren't fun for anybody to bike on or run on.
Right.
But like I was saying to somebody, you know, trail impacts in the summer are a little bit more concerning because soil doesn't fall from the sky.
Right.
You know, snow does. Snow will repair some of those impacts that you might have with footprints and stuff. But on the other hand, we don't want to be post-holing or creating footprints either on our trails.
And the temperatures make a difference too. Early in the morning, a trail might be nice and firm, and then you get a warmer day in the bright sunlight, and then all of a sudden that same trail just 4 or 5 hours later is a lot softer now. So that changes things too in the time. So they are a lot more resilient in that in that regard. They can change over 24 hours.
And then, you know, along those lines too, I know we got some negative feedback, pretty significant negative feedback after our marathon and half marathon last year because it was a really tough day. I was marking the course on Friday, and I just was in my mind. I was like, okay, if it's warm enough, I think we're going to be packing the trail down. I think the trail's going to pack. You know, I think we're going to get it packed. Well, turns out on Saturday, I don't know what it was. It just either wasn't warm enough or it was just not cold enough, but it wasn't packing.
Yeah, it
didn't pack at all, and it was like mashed potatoes, pretty much the whole day. Like, Mike, you can attest to that.
I remember.
But you know, we got some negative feedback. So
but the trails were also bad on Friday.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't just from a race. But, you know, that said, you know, we met with COGS afterwards. We met the city of Duluth. And it's like, okay, how can we, you know, be responsible for any kind of impact we might create? So we came up with a plan that we would regroom the trails after our events.
Mm-hmm, right.
So we would try to bring the trails into a state of, you know, that's either as good or better than it was before our event. And so that's our goal, is to, after our race, we're either going to regroom if necessary. If the conditions are perfect, we might make the trails better by having our riders go over them. But you know, if the conditions aren't great, we're gonna get those trails back into a condition that they were prior to our event.
Mm-hmm.
So that means either we would work with COGS to have them regroomed with the COGS groomers, and we're gonna make a donation to COGS for their grooming fund.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trained in on one of their grooming machines, and so hopefully I could help, you know, with that personally. You can get a crew of snowshoers out there to help. Repack the trail. We also have our snowshoe events after our trail running events in an effort to repack the trails if they get any footprints on
them. And the snowshoes do a far better job. Yeah. In my opinion, the snowshoes are actually better than the groomer because of the impact, and everything is a little bit better in snowshoe running. Mm-hmm. So I think if you get 4 or 5 guys to just go out and conga line on a trail with a pair of snowshoes, that's going to do a better job than just about anything, including the groomer. The groomers are nice, and you can cover a lot of ground a lot faster than you can with 5 guys on snowshoes.
Mm-hmm.
But snowshoes do an amazing job if you get out there. And I think that was a really good idea to follow it up. I know that there wasn't a ton of people doing the snowshoe, partially because it's so hard. You know, people are just like, whoa, there's no way.
Yeah.
So, you know, but eventually I think people will get that idea a little bit more, because I've been out there on those Lester trails all the time, and the ones that are snowshoed are in better shape than the ones that have been groomed.
Cool. And I the idea, you know, I was hoping we'd get enough, you know, I'm hoping this year maybe we get more snowshoers, because you know, just let's say we get 40 snowshoers or 30 snowshoers after our marathon or half marathon, that's going to repack the trail pretty well.
It'll
so
be a really nice job.
I'm hoping we get more snowshoers at our event, at our snowshoe
events
this year.
I'm signed up, so for the half.
All right.
Yeah.
Snowshoe?
Yeah, snowshoe.
All right.
Yeah, the snowshoe half.
I also wanted to bring that up since, you know, our Hartley Park 10K is a snowshoe race along with our trail running race, and then the half marathon and marathon are snowshoe, but... we just worked with U.S. Snowshoe
UTSSA.
USSA US Snowshoe.
Yeah.
US Snowshoe Association. Right. It's like three S's in there. USSSA.
Triple S-A.
So we are the Northwoods Marathon and Half Marathon and the Hartley Park 10K are now national championship qualifying events for USSA.
Sweet.
So that's cool.
That's really nice.
So hopefully that will attract more runners.
Snowshoes.
I mean,
snowshoe runners.
That's nice too because there's a cable race that same day on January 4th. That's also a USSSA qualifier. But now, any local people, if they're interested, they don't have to go all the way to cable. They can stay nearby. So that's going to be really nice.
Yeah.
And for some people too, who also want to go a little farther than the 10K.
Yep.
Because there are people. If you remember the old Northwoods Snowshoe Championships back in the day,
I ran that a couple times.
Yeah, they did the half and the full, and that was pretty well attended actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, granted there were fewer opportunities back in those days. Too,
it was,
but it had numbers.
One of the better attended snowshoe races around for sure.
Yeah, that was a fun race.
We kind of tried to bring that back.
That's exactly why I signed up this year, because I missed that race so much.
Yeah, what was the concept with kind of bringing the Northwoods Marathon back?
Well, I mean,
I've done it.
Yeah, and I did it. I did the half marathon. I did the marathon. Mm-hmm. And, I always really liked, even when I didn't run it myself, I always loved reading about the newspaper, like the year that it was like 35 below and like the guy with the frozen snotsicles, you know. So it was just a really cool event. I really loved the homey nature of it and the old school nature of that event. So we thought, you know, I know the people that used to direct it just kind of retired, you know. So I thought it would be kind of fun to bring that not really bring it back because our course is different,
Did you do the logo similar?
No, the logo's a little different. But I mean, it's kind of an homage to the old vibe. Northwoods event is, you know, just to...
It was a cool event. And that's a great park. It was a cool event. You can get so much distance and trail in there. To do the half marathon or even full marathon just without snowshoes, you can still squeeze that all in there. That's really nice to be able to do that out at Lester.
So that's exciting to... will be national qualifier. So all you have to do is run the event, and you qualify for nationals,
which is you have to finish, right?
Yeah, it's in Leadville, Colorado.
Yeah,
you have to finish.
So you can't just run it and drop out.
No, you got to finish. You got to finish.
Okay, good to know.
I think I would have rather run the Northwoods event on snowshoes last year.
I know,
actually.
I agree.
It was a coin flip if it was faster. You know, that was what I was thinking is what's faster.
Yeah,
like shoes, but I think it was a coin flip.
Depends on how good your snowshoes are, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Get some good snowshoes. You can run in those pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So besides the series, and we can just briefly touch on this, Kim and Andy, you two have a lot of, I mean, you produce a lot of races, and you do, with Adventure Running, tours. Mm-hmm. Can you just touch on that kind of throughout the year besides the winter, just kind of run down? Because you guys do a lot in the running community for sure.
Right. So Adventure Running Company, we've been around for 11 years.
I think 11 years, yeah. We've been really small, like one or two tours a year for most of our existence, but now we're doing a few more. We're doing more now a year because I'm spending more of my time. I'm pretty much working full-time on the Adventure Running Company stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So now we used to literally do one or two a year and in the summer. And this past year, we did our first European tour.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the Mont Blanc tour, which was amazing. And we simply offered it because it was our first year. We kind of wanted to know the runners going into it. So we offered it just to those people that have done our tours in the past.
Okay. Makes sense.
So it filled
almost, 2 days.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we want to do it.
Yeah.
And they're all friends. So it was really cool. It was a group of 10 friends. And 10 is the maximum number of runners we take on our tours. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So how many tours did you do in 2019?
Last year we did 4, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple that didn't fill. So if they don't fill, you know, we need at least, you know. The thing is so the tours are we love doing them. They're super fun. We meet so many cool people. And they're all over the country. But we have to drive there because we have to haul our gear. So if it's a camping tour, some of our tours are camping. Some of them are like our most recent Zion Bryce Canyon tour is we stay in vacation homes along the way. So so that doesn't require as much equipment. But if we're camping, we have to have like all of our, you know, our camp stove and our camp kitchen and everything.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of gear. So we pull a trailer. We purchased a used 15 passenger van last year that we pull with the trailer, or that pull the trailer with that van, and it's awesome because we can just haul everybody in it.
Yeah.
But you know, we our most popular tour has been the Wonderland Trail tour around Mount Rainier. So that's, you know, that's we base out of Seattle, so that's, you know, a 26-hour drive out there and back.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Zion Bryce is a long drive, and we're gonna add we're hoping to add Yosemite this year.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, it will be our first year doing Yosemite, so that's another long drive.
But that would be the reason why you chose Yosemite is it'll be back to back Tahoe, because we'll be out that way.
Perfect. You're already there.
And we've done back to back Mount Rainier tours.
Okay. So we're doing we're for sure doing Tahoe Rim this year. Last year that one actually didn't fill, but so we had a group of runners on one of our Wonderland Trail tours 2 years ago that had so much fun together that they want to do a reunion tour. So this is a pretty much the same group of runners, and they decided they wanted to do Tahoe. So we have like, I think, 6 runners from that tour, and there's a couple of them are bringing their spouses.
Awesome.
So we have almost a full Tahoe tour of friends who ran our Wonderland Trail tour. So we get a lot of repeat customers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people generally have a really good time. They're a lot of fun. We cook for them. We haul all the gear around to the next campsite or the next place we stay. Kim and I are generally, you know, on the trail kind of as guides.
This past tour, the Zion Bryce tour, we had a gentleman who actually won the tour at the Film Fest last year. And so he came on that tour. He was
Tom Peterson, he was
going to bring his wife, but that didn't work out. So that was super fun.
I think he had a great time. It was nice to get to know him better.
Tell me about the ability levels of the runners. Are these pretty hardcore, really fast people, or are these kind of everyday folks?
It's really mostly everyday folks. Every once in a while we'll get a faster runner. So the group spreads out, you know, so I'm a little bit better navigator than Kim, and Kim's much more patient than I am. So I generally go out with the front runners to make sure we're making the right turns along the trail. Kim is very patient, and she generally stays with
things
our
to make the sweep
kind of the sweep. Yeah, essentially that's what it is. So we have a runner in front, we have runner in back,
but we do have a variety. I think most tours we do have a pretty widespread.
But you don't have to be a fast runner at all.
There's not too many tours that like all of them are really intense. There'll be maybe 3 maximum probably in that one Rainier tour. He had 3 guys that were pretty.
Guys.
Yeah, they didn't
want to
stop taking pictures, and he's like, "What? Like,
like, do you see what he?"
Yeah, but that's what we're. I mean, they're not races. We encourage people to stop and, you know, soak your feet in a creek along the way and take pictures of the mountains and the wild.
So on a given day, if you start say 7 or 8 a.m., you have any amount of time to cover those 20 miles or 15 miles or whatever you have. Is that right?
Pretty much
the people who say, here's where we're finishing, we'll have your stuff all ready, but go as fast as you need to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, cool. Pretty much.
So if somebody's thinking about signing up,
they
don't have to be worried about being intimidated.
And sometimes,
or
especially
like
for the Mount Rainier Tour is one of our more difficult tours.
Okay.
And so especially it's advanced. So the second day is a very long day.
Our first day on the Wonderland Trail.
34 miles.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With 6 major climbs.
11,000 feet of elevation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough day. So we advertise that as an advanced tour.
Yeah.
You have to be prepared for that.
And we've had people go out before us, you know, like they'll leave camp in the morning. They'll get done with breakfast, get their tent, you know, all packed up, and then they'll leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That doesn't happen too often, though.
No, but like the woman who was, you know, slower, she left.
They know they want more time.
Let you know, we on our Mont Blanc tour this past summer, we had a 75-year-old man.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, nice.
Did
and
the whole
he
thing.
Was actually the reason, we won't get into it now, but he was the reason why we did this tour.
He's the reason we did that tour.
Yeah.
And this was like his fourth tour that he'd been on.
Yeah, cool.
So his name's Fenton. He's from California, and he came up to me after the Wonderland Trail tour. This was almost 10 or about 7 years ago. He did our first Wonderland Trail tour, and he said, "Andy, I really want to do Mont Blanc before I stop running." And he was in his late 60s at the time. And I really want to do it with you guys. And I never forgot that.
Yeah.
But we were busy with our family.
We
only did like 1 or 2 trips a year when our kids were younger, because we wanted to make sure we weren't missing any of their athletic events
or their
concerts or whatever. So we weren't doing that many tours, and we just didn't have time to do it for a number of years. And finally, last summer, I realized I've got time.
The stars aligned.
Our kids are off to college, and, you know, we can do it. So the first thing I did was contacted Fenton. I said, "Hey, Fenton, do you still want to do Mont Blanc?" And he said, he emailed me back and said, this is the best news I've gotten in a long time. Yeah, let's do it. Nice. So once Fenton was in, it was like, okay, we're doing it. Nice. And yeah. So he did it. He was 75, did it every single day.
Oh, wow.
Just did amazing. That's so cool. The cool thing about like a tour like Mont Blanc is that we actually run into our lodging facility every day.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't have to shuttle. It's like those are the best trips is when we can just run right into where we're camping or where we're staying. And so we stay in these little inns and little refugios along the way. And they're just all beautiful. We got fed like, you know, great meals.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a really, really nice trip. But, you know, some trips we have to shuttle a little bit. Sure. But
I'm sure the van gets pretty stinky.
It does. Yeah, we have a ton of fun. They're just really a lot of fun. You know, we don't get a lot of Duluth runners, so it'd be fun to get more folks from Duluth.
We're getting more Minnesota runners.
We are getting a few more Minnesota runners. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've probably had about 200 people that have done trips with us over the last several years. So cool. We've got a nice mailing list of those people and we're getting new people every year. And it's just they're a lot of fun. You know, we got the idea from mountain bike tours. Mountain bike tours do similar things. That's where I got the idea. I'm like, nobody's doing it for trail running. This was, 10 years ago. And I think we were one of the first companies in the whole country to really do trail running tours. Huh. Now there's a few companies that are doing it, but we've been doing it for probably the longest. They're a lot of fun and we're just go out and eat some good food and run on some great trails and share all these beautiful places with people and it's pretty cool.
So if anybody listening is interested, it's adventurerunningco.com is the website. Go there and pretty much all the information you're going to need is right there for the different tours and how hard that tour is and kind of what to expect. Very cool.
And we do have friends that go along and help out.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So it's kind of cool. I've got some some friends that are semi-retired now. Aaron Smith, he's a local runner that gets out. He's gone on a couple of our tours and, helps out. Like, helps kind of guide. And, so Aaron, we had a great group of runners for our last... Jason Buffington. Oh, yeah. Another local runner, Aaron Smith, and my friend Pat O'Connell, and then myself, we did the Wonderland Trail Tour, and we had a great crew, and so Aaron and Jason were basically the runners on the trail. I was driving the support with Pat Moore. I was on the trail a couple days, but they got to run the whole Wonderland Trail.
Nice.
And
good training for Superior 100.
Good training.
Yeah.
But, I put them to work.
Yeah,
but they didn't. They got a free tour out of it. Oh, so,
that's sweet.
So yeah. So I'm looking. I have friends that are interested in helping out on any tours. Drop me a line and send me your resume. we'll hook you up with.
Do they need certain cooking skills, like camp cooking skills or something like that?
Not necessarily. Kim and I do most of the cooking.
Yeah,
I've gotten better at camp cooking. Kim is a master chef. I've gotten better.
And so we've reported on a lot of races that you two produce. So I think that'd be kind of fun to, get a sense, put a face to the name, just quickly run down the other races that you do, that you put on in the, throughout the year. And then I think we can get to some kind of your running history, but just quick run down, like moving into 2020, kind of the race, race calendar.
So like we said, the remainder of the Duluth Winter Trail Running Series, and then Last Runner Standing is in June. I believe it's the first weekend of June.
Yeah, June 6th, I think. June 6th and 7th, or June 7th and 8th, something like that.
Yeah, and that's the third annual.
First weekend of June.
Third annual.
Be the third one, yeah. We had a great performance last year by Brandon Johnson. And we are an affiliate event now for Biggs Backyard Ultra.
Like a golden ticket?
We're not a golden ticket. So the golden ticket thing, if people are familiar with Biggs Backyard Ultra, that's kind of the one that started all these Last Runner Standing events.
Yeah.
We actually trademarked Last Runner Standing, so we're the only one out there called Last Runner Standing. It's a great name.
Smart.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
And we were thinking about even doing...
like Courtney DeWalter to come.
Yeah.
Courtney, if you're out there...
So we are an affiliate event, which means that the winner of our event, if they do produce a really good distance or performance, can still get a ticket, get a shot at running Biggs.
Okay.
We did apply for 2021 to be a golden ticket event, and I think we got a pretty good shot to be a golden ticket event in 2021. But for 2020, we're an affiliate event, so Cool. So if we have a runner that has a great performance, they could still get a entry into Biggs Backyard Archer, which is pretty exclusive.
Right.
There's not too many. They don't take too many entries. You have to win the golden ticket or perform well at an affiliate.
Be a beast, essentially.
Just be picked, you know right. Gary Cantrell or Lazarus Lake or whatever. Yeah. I know Gary pretty well. He's a friend of mine. And so I don't call him Laz because I know him as Gary, but he puts that race on along with Barkley Marathons and some other great races. But so yeah, that's kind of exciting too. We just kind of, that just happened fairly soon.
Cool.
Did you want to avoid your question?
Yeah. So then for sure we have Wild Duluth coming up October.
It's always the third.
17th and 18th. It's always the third Saturday of October. Last year we had an awesome event. Mike was an incredible performance, won the 100K, and then came back Sunday and won the 10K. So that was a great
amazing
performance, Mike.
Really, love that format, too.
Really cool.
Saturday,
yeah.
Sunday.
Yeah,
we
so
did,
the,
too. We
so,
loved this,
yes,
having
we did
the half marathon on Sunday and the 10K, because as much as we thought we were going to be tired going into Sunday's races, there was so much energy with those runners that it was awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun.
So, and Spirit Mountain, having that as a finish line was also
got a lot of good feedback about the venue and the course for the half marathon 10K. So we'll do it again Saturday, Sunday, ultra marathons on Saturday, half marathon 10K on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Last year we had about 750 runners, so that was a pretty good turnout.
Yeah.
Biggest event we've ever had. So, I mean, it's nice. We've grown fairly slowly at Wild Duluth, which has been nice. We haven't had the need yet to. We're pretty close to probably having to put a limit on our numbers, but right now for the 100K, 50K, we probably won't have a limit. Probably will be limiting the half marathon again to 300 runners, I think, is what we have. Mm-hmm. And then probably around 200 for the 10K, something like that. So, we have to do some limitations, but we'll hopefully keep going ahead with that. Mm-hmm. And then Kim mentioned a little bit briefly, we're looking at bringing the Voyager Quest stage race back for 2020. So we're considering that. We're just trying to figure out how it's going to fit into our tour schedule and our other race schedule and all that stuff.
And other races.
And other local races. We don't want to.
Right.
Put it on during obviously you don't want to put it on during superior races or anything like that. Right. So we're trying to figure out how it fits into the race calendar and our tour calendar. So we're still not 100% certain, but once we figure that out, if we're going to do Voyager Quest again, we've had some people saying that they really want us to bring it back.
Huh.
It's a fun 3-day stage race. Used to be a 4-day stage race, but we're going to probably change it to a 3-day format, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And it did used to be at the end of August, so it was actually really great training for people going into the superior races.
So we're thinking about that again.
When was Voyager Quest in the past?
End of August.
And how many years?
Did it like 2 or 3 years, I think. And it got like, we had like 20, maybe 15 runners 1 year, which was, a good number. And then it got to the point where we had like, 1 year we had like 5 runners. And it was just like, I was working full time at the, I just couldn't take off, two or three days of work for couldn't afford to do it. So now I have a little more time, so it's possible we could bring it back.
I think that would be a more popular thing these days. I think, especially with the running tours growing, like it's kind of in that same vein.
Really cool event, super fun. Yeah. It's a self-sufficient, kind of a self-supported type race, so we don't really have aid stations.
It's like up the shore on the SHT?
Yeah, okay. We'd be like around the Grand Marais area, kind of Judge C.R. Magny State Park to Tofty kind of is the route. It's like, two nights we reserve campsites and people can camp, or they can also stay in a hotel if they want, but they'd have to find their own way to get to the hotel. But we do reserve campsites for people to camp at.
Yeah.
People would bring their own food, to cook with, they'd have to have their own dinners kind of packed up.
Yeah.
And they'd have to have their own lodging, their own tent. And then each day they'd have to carry their own food. We won't have aid stations. The course isn't going to be marked, so you have to follow the Blue Blazes. The Spear Hiking Trail. It's all on Spear Hiking Trail.
Yeah.
Wherever it deviated from the Spear Hiking Trail, we would mark that area.
Okay.
We did have water stops.
Well, we would, yeah. So we had, instead of aid stations, we had check-ins. So depending on how long the day was, we had two or three check-in checkpoints. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a folder and you'd check in. When you came to that point, you'd write your name down, you'd sign your name and the time you checked in to make sure you're not lost on the trail.
Right.
And then we'd have water. So you could refill your water bottles, but we didn't have any food. So you have to carry your own food for the day. So it's kind of a self-sufficient. That's part of the strategy.
Yeah. Sure.
Is to know what to carry. So
not super long days though.
Okay.
Well, we have a 50K day, 30-mile day will be one of the days. So.
Pretty long. Yeah. You guys ever step back and say, like, we're crazy? Like, why would we do Last Runner Standing? Why would we do an ultra marathon and then another race the next day? Like, I want to sleep. I mean,
the thing is, Kim said, is the energy. It's the positive, and really it's like, Mike, you kind of allude, before Wild Duluth, I get kind of tired of, all the work that goes into it. And I'm not saying it's a lot of work. It's fun. I enjoy doing all the planning and all that stuff. But, it does, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, and you're out there marking the course or doing some coursework or whatever, and you're kind of like, geez, man, this is kind of getting old, But then race day rolls around, and you realize why you do it, because you see all these happy people, these smiling faces crossing the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all really. That's what it is all about, and we really enjoy that. And that energy that we get from the runners on the day of the race carries us over to the next race. I mean, it really
next
does.
Hour, the
and
next
we were
day.
There pretty late on Sunday because we had a half marathon finisher. I think I left there at 6 p.m.
Did you sleep Saturday night or?
We got like 4 hours.
Probably a little bit, but
I think we got like 4 hours of sleep.
I think we did.
Yeah. Probably not too bad. It's not too bad. 4 hours of sleep. Some people don't sleep more than 4 hours. So it is.
Andy's not a morning person. That's why the race starts at like 10. That way, Last Runner Standing starts at 10.
Nice. Those tours are kind of tough on me sometimes. Getting up early in the morning, making coffee.
Yeah.
Got to do it though. Got to do it. But no, it's really just the. You kind of ask that question every once in a while, but really it's just...
I asked that question when I heard about the Saturday, Sunday, and Last Runner, too. It's like, geez, because you don't know.
Last Runner Standing is literally the most fun race we put on. We love it because we love seeing the runners finish every hour.
Yeah.
We get to see runners finish every hour.
And really get to know
it's awesome.
Them.
And we get to know them. People are camping. Just being all the energy at the finish line all night. We got a fire. We're sitting around the fire and watching the runner, the headlights and coming down headlamps coming down the hill of Spirit Mountain.
The plunge.
It's really probably one of our favorite events just because
it's
so...
It's a cool race.
Yeah, it's just super fun because you get to see all these people and... Yeah. And you really, there's only one aid station, so... It's not, it's not as challenging to plan,
logistically to produce and manage it.
Yeah, like 100, Superior Trail 100, man. Yeah. That's Superior Sawtooth 100. That's a tough race to manage because you got a
point to point
100 miles at all those aid stations. So that is a challenge, but that Last Runner Standing doesn't have that quite as much. So, but we do it, obviously because we really love to see, we just love doing it. So,
Yeah.
And we've run enough races ourselves to kind of get an idea what what we like in ultra marathons.
Yeah.
We're pretty old school. We're not fancy, I don't think. We're fairly old school, but we want to provide just the basics that people need, as far as, we think we have good aid stations, we have great volunteers, that are encouraging and hard workers, and that's the key, is having really good volunteers. But making sure everybody has enough to eat and has enough, to drink, gets a finisher's award, and we always, Kim will never do medals, just so everybody knows. If you want to do one of our races, you'll never get a medal, which is fine. We try to use functional awards, cups, mugs that you can drink coffee out of, or Mike's using he's got his 100K champion what do you call
huge
bottle
thing.
Hot cold, it keeps your coffee hot and your ice cold water cold. So that's Mike's, won that award. It's really big. But that's your trophy for winning the 100K, and it's something you can use. So it's usually always functional. So that something you can use. And our t-shirts are, we do a new design every year. I'm wearing our sweatshirt from Wild Duluth this year. And
sweet design.
So just try to.
So you talked a little bit about some of your races that you produce, somewhat inspired by some of the races that you've participated in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about that, how you guys got started into running. Did you hop into ultras right away? Did you do kind of like everybody else, 5K, maybe
high school, college, collegiate?
Well, the funny 5K thing
kind
is,
of deal or what?
Andy, actually, I ran all through high
school. Kim is the real runner. let's just put that out here right now. Kim ran collegiately very successfully.
I ran in high school and college, and then.
And where'd you go to high school and college?
High school, I went. I grew up in St. Paul, and I went to Harding High School. So if you used to go to the Swain event, Harding was there. So, and I went to college at La Crosse.
Division III powerhouse, by the way.
Yeah, in running.
They were very
we went to nationals.
Very good back in the day. Kim was cool.
But when we got married, actually, well, I take that back. Well, one step back. Senior year of college, Andy actually went out for college.
I ran cross country my senior year in college. I never ran in high school. I mean, I played other sports.
You both had lacrosse then? Or?
Yeah, we both. That's where we met. UW lacrosse is where we met. I played the sport lacrosse at lacrosse for 3 years, and then decided my senior year I would go for cross country.
Right.
Was Kim heckling you or something?
Well,
no.
We probably don't want to get into that. No. It was the one period in our relationship where we sort of broke up a little bit for a little while.
So he was stalking me.
Yeah, I guess you could put it that way. I thought I'd run cross country. Maybe we could go to cross country parties together.
And look how it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out great.
We've been running for 27 years.
27 years, so wow. It's a good thing I stuck it out. ran cross country my senior year. That's creepy. All right.
So after we got married, Andy literally got the Ultra Runner magazine.
Yeah.
For 4 years.
So this is how long we've been running ultra marathons and trail runs races, right? So, literally back in the early 90s, you know, this is when I started running in college a little bit after I met Kim, because Kim was a real runner. And I thought, well, I've got to run a little bit to keep up with her. I did some bike racing. I used to race road bikes in college, and I did a couple triathlon. And I'm terrible. I sink. I can't swim at all. But I thought, you know, at the time I was bike racing, so I'll be one of the last ones out of the water. I was the third to last out of the water. I was about 125 triathletes, and I thought, well, I'll catch everybody on the bike. You know, I'll pass a lot of people on the bike, and I did. I passed a lot of people on the bike because I was bike racing, and I thought, well, maybe I'll just hold my own on the run. Well, I ended up actually passing more people on the run than I did on the bike. I'm like, oh, I guess I can run okay. So then I started running a little bit more. And then this is like early 90s. I went to grad school at the University of Montana in Missoula. And I'm like, man, I really want to do some trail races. Well, back in the early 90s, like 92, this is like 1992, there weren't really any or very many short trail races. It just, trail running wasn't a thing. Trail running essentially wasn't really even that big a thing back then.
But were there trails? I mean, like,
oh yeah, there were trails. So we would go, trails, but I kind of wanted to do some trail races, you know, but there weren't races. So the only races, like the majority of the trail races back in the early 90s and, you know, 80s were ultra marathons. Like you had the Voyager, you know, you had Voyager out there. You had Voyager 50-mile race. You had Western States 100. You had these Leadville 100. You had these 100-mile trail races. And like, well, if I want to start trail racing, I got to learn how to do ultramarathons.
Gotta go long.
So that's kind of what I started, you know, thinking about ultramarathon running. And then I, like Kim said, I got a subscription to Ultra Running Magazine in 1992. And I didn't run my first even 50K until 1994. So, like, there was no internet back then either. So it's like, okay, I want to learn about, how do I learn about trail ultra marathon running? Well, I better get this magazine. So I thought, well, I'll just subscribe to this magazine. And I mean, I literally have every ultra running magazine since 1992.
Wow.
In our basement,
I got to clean that closet.
It's a fire hazard.
But you know, back in the day before the internet, you know, if I wanted to do an ultra marathon, I would like, for instance, Western States 100.
Yeah.
I was signed up to run that in 2000. We talked about that. I sprained my ankle and I couldn't run it. But I wanted to learn more about the course. Mm-hmm. So I went and got every Western States 100. Was always in the September issue of Ultra Running Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So I went downstairs, grabbed all my September issues of Ultra Running Magazine, and read about Western States 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all, and it was great. You know, I had pictures. Yeah. I could see pictures.
It
I could read about them.
Then.
It was black and white.
Pictures. Yeah.
Kim was a cover girl. She was on the cover of Ultra Running
in
the early 2000s. You know, crossing the creek at Voyager. So she's been on the cover of Ultra Running, which is cool. So just would grab my ultra running magazines out before the internet, and now the internet's great, so I don't really need them as much, but I still kind of want to keep them.
They're still there.
They're still there. So if you're looking for an old ultra running magazine, I have some issues.
The museum
from 1992. I took a little break when our kids were in high school. I wasn't running as many ultras, and so I didn't get it for a couple years, but I've got most of the issues.
Do you, Andy, do you have like a favorite distance or a favorite race out there that you especially like?
I would say historically 50 miles was always my best distance. Uh-huh. I liked 50 miles. 50K was always just a little too fast. You get the speedy marathoners that would come in. Right. I couldn't quite keep up with them. I've never been a good 100-mile runner. Kim is the 100-mile runner in the family, for sure. She's got the – I think you got the PR by almost 3 hours. Nice. My family. But 50 miles is my most successful distance.
Spot.
I won more races at 50 miles and got some of my faster times at 50 right. miles. So that would be my best distance, I think, historically. 50K now probably, because I'm just not quite in 50 mile shape yet. So.
And Kim, were you like a track person? Were you cross country? What was your, how'd you get in? I mean, was it kind of Andy just like, let's do ultras? Or what?
Yeah, I'll be honest. It took me a while to get into ultras because I didn't understand that you'd walk in a race. That really bothered me after, you know, coming off of like doing a 1500 meter on a track, you know, you're going all out and that, but after I did my first 50K, I was hooked.
Which is funny because you're one of the better power walkers that I know. You're an incredible power walker, so you pick that up pretty quickly.
Yeah. At Hard Rock, you have to power walk. So.
Yeah. That'd be pretty easy for you to say what your favorite race is.
Yes.
She just said it.
Hard Rock?
Hard Rock, yeah.
What about it? What makes it so great?
I love the San Juan Mountains, actually.
The scenery, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I worked in Durango in college at a summer camp.
Okay.
And so when Andy got into ultra running, he had told me, hey, there's this race called Hard Rock. And I was like, well, I'm in. Yeah. Like, there's a 100-mile race there. And so I knew I would always do that. Mm-hmm. And I did it 2 years in a row. And each year it, you know, goes a different direction. They go opposite directions.
Okay.
And so I've done it both directions. Nice. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
It's just a beautiful.
Every picture you see of Hard Rock is just like, whoa, that's pretty amazing.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I crewed for the first year she did it in 2008. And I also worked out there. When she was out there, I worked for the Forest Service out in that area. And the San Juan Mountains are some of the most spectacular mountains in the world. There's only one race, 100-mile race that I really want to do, and that's Hard Rock. And it's super hard to get into now. But Kim loved Hard Rock so much that, you know, she won't talk about it, but she had just come off 2 years where she finished top 10 woman in Western states. So she was 7th in 2006 and 10th in 2007, which means she could automatically get in the next year.
Okay.
Which is kind of, you know how tough it is to get into Western states. Right. So she had an automatic entry into Western states again. But
he was not happy that I gave it up.
Yeah, you gave it up. But she ran Hard Rock, which was the 100-mile race. It was just amazing. So it was worth it. But, it was pretty cool that you got those automatic entries into Western states because you're so fast.
Yeah.
When I think about Hard Rock, too, the first thing that comes to my mind, well, maybe the second, the scenery would be the first thing that comes to my mind, but then the elevation.
Right.
Now, you guys were out there for a little bit, too, so that helped. But was the elevation a challenge for you?
Or? So my first year that I did it in 2008... I did everything right. Mm-hmm. I went out 2 weeks in advance.
Okay.
I was a teacher at the time, so I had the summer off.
Oh, nice.
And I went out with a friend of mine, and actually Andy promised that I'd come home. He was worried that I would come home.
Yeah.
And we have three children. So, but I went out with a friend, and we did a backpack trip.
Nice.
And so I was sleeping at 11,000 feet
and
hiking some of the trail. And then she actually had a friend that lived in Durango, so she left me in Silverton for about 4 days before the race. And so I literally slept by the river, down by the river in Silverton, and just woke up and made my pancakes by the river and walked into town. And so I was completely acclimated.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
I did have a really good race there. I mean, I felt good. Sure, I was huffing and puffing, but I was not.
First non-mountain state runner, man or woman, that year.
Yeah.
Because everybody else was ahead of her. We were from the mountain, like California, Colorado, Wyoming, whatever, mostly Colorado. But so she was the first non-mountain state runner to finish that
That's
year.
Pretty cool. Flatlander.
First flatlander, essentially,
So that year, I ran it in 36 hours and 15 minutes.
Fourth woman overall.
Okay. And, yeah, fourth woman. Well, actually, I was third.
You were third.
And then
so
the woman passed me at 4 miles to go.
Because you had a horrible asthma attack. Yeah. It was my fault because I didn't give you your inhaler. Because she actually was born with asthma, very bad asthma when she was born, and she's kind of grown out of it, but still.
Yeah, so for 91 miles, I carried it. And it wasn't, I don't think. I switched her back
out at the aid station. I forgot to switch that into it. So kind of my fault.
But I hadn't had an asthma attack for, and I think it was literally just more excitement.
Yeah.
And I was exhausted, of course. I've been up for 36 hours. But, so I was passed by a woman, and so I came in fourth. But then the following year, I did it all the wrong way. I went out and I arrived 3 days before, so I was not acclimated.
Yeah.
I had my child with me, so I was also playing the mom role.
Yep.
And my sister was with me and her boy, so my nephew and my sister. And 3 days before, your blood is just starting to do its thing.
Right.
Like it's and it probably at 3 days, it's the thickest, and just didn't go well. Yeah. So, and that year,
8 hours slower.
Handy's Peak, which is the 14er that you climb, was at mile 29.
Okay.
And the year before, it was at mile 71 or whatever.
Yeah.
So, because it was reversed. So, literally at about mile 25, I started getting sick.
Yeah.
And so I was throwing up from about mile 25 to mile 80. And in Hard Rock, you can have a pacer starting at mile 50. Usually it's like mile 62. There it's mile 50 something.
Right around 50, yeah.
So I did have a pacer. And although I will say, the best 100 mile I've ever done, I never had a pacer.
Yeah.
I was solo, which I loved the experience.
Nice.
But anyway, that was San Diego 100. So I'm running with my pacer, and at about mile 70, he said, "Oh yeah, I would have dropped a long time ago."
Yeah.
You are not being helpful.
He actually, her pacer actually made kind of a cool little video of her experience. And if you went on YouTube and searched like pacing Hard Rock or something, you might find it. That's Kim's. Kim's experience when she was not feeling well. It's really well
done,
though.
It's kind of
interesting.
I did not know he was doing that.
Okay.
That's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube, it was really nice.
Yeah.
I probably had one of my better 100 milers at Leadville in 2004, and I'm not very good at elevation.
Yeah.
So we were out there. We went like a week and a half early with the family, like all three, took our three kids, and we were with another family, and we just camped, car camped, and did some hiking. Sometimes if I don't acclimate well, I'll get sick starting at like 10,000 feet, like literally splitting headaches, nausea.
Yeah.
I jumped out of the car and did the 10K, and we had just arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she did all right. Yeah,
yeah.
but anyways, that for me, that week and a half for me was great. I went over whole past, 12,000 feet both times and didn't get sick. I didn't have headaches or nausea. So, and I got nausea like the last 50 miles because I was getting dehydrated and I threw up. But I was feeling really good until that point. So at Leadville, it was one of my better 100 milers. But I haven't had a real good 100 miler. Kim's had a lot of good 100-milers.
Anything on the docket for 2020, or do you have any bucket list races that you haven't done?
You know, I had on the docket Superior 100.
Yeah, she's never run it.
You've never run it.
But I was just diagnosed with my first kind of major injury today. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, it's a long ways out. What, 9 months?
Right. I've run every other Superior race other than the 100.
Oh, all the other, just the spring and the fall.
50. Oh, yeah,
wow.
Spring and fall.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
Last one.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. The issue is that you have to sign up, in January.
Yeah.
So you have to.
The nice thing is knowing a race director sometimes helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get that race director thing.
Yeah.
Where we get, So hopefully we'll see.
Yeah.
So
any bucket list race for you, Andy, or 2020 race that you got in your?
I don't really have anything thinking about yet for 2020, but I mean, the only race that I've got a few bucket list races still, but like Hard Rock is the only race I really ultra marathon that I really would like to do. Which means Hard Rock to get into is really hard, and you have to get a qualifier. So. One of these days, I'll probably try to get a qualifier, see if I qualify for Hard Rock and do that. If my qualifier goes poorly, I may just say I'm done with 100 milers.
Does the qualifier have to be a 100 miler?
Yeah, it has to be a 100 miler, and it has to be a mountain race. So,
oh, sure.
The Bear 100, I ran the Bear 100. The last time I ran the Bear 100, I dropped out at 70 miles. So that's probably one I'll do for a qualifier. That's a qualifier for Hard Rock. It's out,
so you get a little revenge factor for one.
Exactly.
A little motivation there.
So, yeah. That's a great race. And it's a really cool, it's a cool course. Nice. I paced my friend last year 50 miles, the last 50 miles. And so I got to see the last 50 miles, which was nice. Yeah. Or, you know, the last 30 that I didn't do.
Right.
So I know the whole course now.
Yeah.
So I would like to try that one again. You know, like I just... In all the hundreds I've done recently, I've been getting so sick I've been just not managing my electrolytes well. Mm-hmm. After running ultras for 20 years, you'd think I would know how to manage my electrolytes, but I'm just like, I don't know. I still have trouble with that. Just become a baby with my, you know, what I can eat and drink and stuff sometimes. So
I have a race I'd really like to do.
What's that?
Well, I've done it numerous times, but I would like to run another really good Voyager.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
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 Yeah. I would like, I mean, I've got to go, definitely Voyager, that's on the list. I don't know if I can do it, maybe this year, because last year we couldn't do it because we were in Europe for the Mont Blanc Tour, but I've got 9 finishes there, so I need to get 10, obviously.
Oh, sure.
So Voyager's...
Do you want to get a hat or a jersey?
Yeah, whatever, I just want to get 10. So Voyager's definitely on the list. I mean, if I decided to run the Bear 100, that'd be a great training run for it, so...
Another race that we just did for the first time this year, which I thought was awesome, was Marquette 50.
Yeah,
it's
beautiful. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was beautiful.
It was really
a pretty
beautiful.
Popular one for superior runners.
Right.
It's a good lead up for that.
It is. Yeah. There's a lot of superior runners there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Similar course, right? Pretty relatively technical.
It's tough. Yeah.
Single track kind of stuff.
It's interesting because there are some really runnable places.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like where it's runnable, it's just runnable.
Yeah.
And where it's technical.
It's very technical.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Where it's technical, it's like I would say where it's technical, it's probably even more technical,
more technical
than Wild Duluth, which I consider one of the more technical.
You're right.
50Ks. If not the most technical 50K in the upper Midwest.
Right.
So after we did the 50K there last year, we were like, ooh, maybe this is harder than Wild Duluth. You know, as an ultra marathoner director, you're like, you want to put on the hardest race, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of the thing.
Exactly.
Like ultra runners want hard races, so that's kind of the goal, is to be the hardest race, right? But man, I was thinking Marquette's tough.
Yeah.
Where it was technical, it was very technical, and but then there's these nice stretches where you're running along the lake and it's super smooth and runnable.
Yeah, yeah.
So those sections were like,
it's kind of nice.
So that those sections probably made it overall a little easier than probably Superior or Wild Duluth, but the technical sections are really, really tough. Steep climbs, rocky climbs. But I was signed up for the 50 miler last year, and I ended up stopping at the 50K because the 50 miler would require that I went out and did the 20 mile loop again. And it was getting really hot, and I was starting to feel kind of sick. I'm like, I'm done at 50K. So technically, I DNF there, but I didn't do 50K. Yeah, I saw the whole course.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a bummer. I mean, I was happy at the time that I stopped because I wasn't feeling good.
Right,
I didn't feel like going out in the heat and feeling crappy.
Yeah.
But, and I've gotten enough 50-mile finishes in my life that I don't have to worry about that so much. But you know, after a while, it would have been nice to get that 50-mile finish, too. But
right. Here's a kind of a bizarre question. So you now produce winter trail running races. Do you ever have a what's the word I'm looking for? Desire to do, like, Arrowhead or some of those, like, extreme kind of winter?
Yeah.
Like, for me to race one?
Yeah.
I do not. I couldn't, at this point in my life, I couldn't keep warm. I couldn't. Like, there's something,
I think we talked about, like, that St. Croix one, that 40-miler.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That looks, that's kind of cool. I'd be interested in doing that.
It's kind of like the introduction where you have to prove that you can use your gear.
I would maybe like to try that 40-miler, and then I've thought about this, the Arrowhead is like, you know, it's right in the backyard, right?
Yeah.
But... I don't know. We'll see.
Just to get it on the resume.
I wouldn't be against it because I would much rather run in cold weather than hot weather. I'm just not a good hot weather runner, at least at this point in my life. I like cold weather better. I just don't get those electrolyte issues so much. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how the 100-mile thing goes if I decide to do another 100-miler.
Jump back in it, yeah.
But, you know, I'm probably going to – thinking about doing a snowshoe race this winter. I might go over and do the one in Ironwood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a qualifier.
Yep.
Even though I don't think I would go to Leadville to do the national championship if I qualified for the snowshoe thing, but I think I I would like to do a snowshoe race this winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll probably do that somewhere. Probably not at ours because I got to direct it.
But. Right.
Yeah. It means you have to win, right?
Yeah, no. You don't want to win your own race. The very first ultra I ever did. So this is 1994. And then I didn't run a 50-miler until 1996, which was Superior. But the very first 50 ultra marathon I ever did in my life was over in – we were living over by Green Bay, and we called it the Michikinee 50. And it was a 50K run in the Michikinee County Forest north of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And we put it on. We had like 20 runners.
No. I put it on with all my relatives.
Yeah, so I, because I wanted to do an ultra. So it was like all our aid stations were all like our parents and our our family. Yeah. Families ran the aid station. Yeah. And so.
Even my grandma was there.
The funny thing is, you mentioned that about winning your own race. And at one point in that race, the first 50K I'd ever run or put on, and I was in the lead for a while. I'm like, I can't win my own race, you know? So I ended up getting third, which is good. And I didn't sandbag. Two guys passed me legitimately. Yeah. They were faster. But I was thinking, yeah, like, man, I don't want to win my own race. People think I cheated or something.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, so I didn't win, so that was good.
Oh, yeah.
But that was the very first ultra marathon I ever did. It was the Michikinee 50.
Wow.
So my dad designed the t-shirt. It was cool. My dad's a graphic artist, so anyways. That was kind of fun.
That's pretty cool.
Very first ultra.
I think we could probably yap for hours.
We could. Yeah, there's a lot of history.
Andy could.
Yeah.
I could. I can really talk a lot. But I think the funnest things of our career probably our running career were the times that we both won races together.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we did
Power Couple.
Voyager at least once.
And Ice Age.
Ice Age, which was cool. And then that 50K.
Probably Superior somewhere.
That Dance with Dirt 50K or Dance with the Devil 50K in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So it's cool.
Nice.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah,
it was
fun. Oh, yeah, Ouachita. But you did the 50K and I did the 50 mile. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think it's so cool to see people who are invested in putting on fun races, but also just, like, maintaining the trails and, you know, doing good for the community and you know, running races, too. So, you know, that's kind of what we like to promote at the Duluth Rundown, you know, is just
that's
getting
good.
People
that's
out
cool.
there and stuff.
I really
so,
appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of funny, I mean, probably an ego thing, but, like, you know, I think some of the younger runners probably don't even know that Kim and I were runners at one time. You know, maybe wouldn't even know that we were runners. So I appreciate you, you know, asking us some questions about it because we did used to run a little bit.
Yeah.
We don't run quite as much now. But, you know, last year we did a few more 50Ks and now that our...
Yeah.
Our, we're empty nesters.
Yeah, now that we're empty nesters, we'll have a little more time to run.
More time to train.
Kim will
more time to train
feel
than
up
anything.
Stronger than ever when she gets over this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's... But, yeah, you break down a little quicker as when you get into your 50s, too, I guess. So, but we're still hanging in there, having fun. We love getting out and running on the trails and sharing it with other people. And we started gravel biking, which has been fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks, guys. Yeah, appreciate you guys coming on to the podcast.
It was really fun. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And again, anybody out there listening, sign up for these races that are coming up here in the next few days. So January 4th, January 11th, February 8th, February 22nd. We've got a lot of different races to choose from. Sign up for all of them.
They're fun. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, and that wraps up episode number 13 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. We want to thank Andy and Kim for coming on and talking about their races and their racing history and their tours that they put on with Adventure Running Company. Mike, you got anything else to add?
No, get out there, come to the Trail Running Film Festival, come to make it out to a winter race, and
enjoy the winter trails.